Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityurma amritam gamaya, om shanti shanti shantihi. Om, lead us from the unreal to the real, lead us from darkness unto light, lead us from death to immortality. Om, peace, peace, peace. Namaste and good morning, everybody. It's a specially joyous occasion. Tomorrow is a holy, and also this is the birthday of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whom you can see there. One of the incarnations of Vishnu, one of the incarnations of God. Sri Ramakrishna was firmly convinced that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was an incarnation of God. He was born more than 600 years ago in far off India, in the eastern part of India. And for a long time, for centuries, his influence was mostly felt throughout the eastern part of India. Even now, if you go to the birthplace, Nadia, if you see the culture of the people there, the Vaishnavas, they are renowned for their devotion, their sweetness, their the very gentle nature of the people there. It's all due to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and especially the form of ecstatic worship that he spread across Bengal in those days, Orissa, Bengal, eastern part of India, called Kirtan, singing the name of God and dancing, singing and dancing. So this Kirtan, which you just heard, one of those Kirtans, thanks, by the way, to Ratan Babu and his party for coming here today, and you'll hear more of this later on. But in a strange turn of events, and very interesting, that it's not just the eastern part of India which is the locus of the entire Chaitanya movement now, but here, New York, Manhattan, we are part of this story very much so. Because Srila Prabhupada, who was instrumental in setting up the ISKCON, the Krishna Consciousness Movement here, right here in New York, it was in the late 60s, right here in New York, he started this. And the Kirtan, which you just heard, like that. And it spread all over the world. So the story starts in Nadia, Mayapur in Nadia, in about 600 years ago, but it continues here in Manhattan and New York, and through New York across the world now. It's a story, something that is present all over the world. So we go back to the source, to the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu today, and I'll narrate. It's an amazing, inspiring, extraordinary life. Nobody who hears it can remain unmoved. The phrase which we have used, Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya, immersed in the love of God. Immersed in the love of God. This is the best way to characterize Sri Chaitanya. He was born to a pious Brahmin family 600 years ago. Sri Jagannath Mishra was his father, and Shachi Devi was his mother. Now, from the very beginning, you find descriptions of the physical beauty of the child. And this is something that you find throughout his lifetime. He lived to about his mid-40s. So throughout his lifetime, people who saw him as a child, as a youngster, as a grown man, they all testify to the extraordinary, not just handsome, it was extraordinarily beautiful. Nobody who saw him could fail. The first thing that they noticed about him was his extraordinary beauty. The descriptions go that the child was of golden hue, and they describing his ruddy lips and ruddy hands and feet is extraordinarily beautiful. And as he grew up, he was actually toweringly tall. He towered over a head taller than all the others around him. You can see the picture there. There's a description of him much later in the little stone room in which he lived, Gambhira, in Puri. And they describe how when he would lie down, he would almost fill the entire room. He was such a toweringly tall man. The women of the locality, of course, the community, they loved him. And so when they would finish their household chores, their descriptions of how they would gather around in Sachi Devi's house and to adore and fondle the baby and pass him around from one lap to another. He grew up to be a very mischievous kid. So there are any number of stories of him, very much reminiscent of the childhood stories of Krishna. But of course, everyone adored him for his mischief, and they came to love him even more. And there are so many stories of his childhood, how he... by the way, we have lots of accounts of him, because there were many people who were eyewitnesses, and very soon after his time, it was all written down. Notably in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj, who was a noted saint and scholar, who wrote mostly in Sanskrit, but this is a Sanskritized Bengali. And this is a very, it's a favorite book among the Vaishnavas, Bengal Vaishnavas. I too have a copy, by the way, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So a lot of these incidents are all noted, and they were narrated by eyewitnesses. There is this very cute story of a thief. He would often run away from home, you know, just wander around the neighborhood. So there was this story of a thief who saw the jewels the little toddler was bedecked with, and picked him up and kidnapped him and wanted to run away so that he could. He was mostly the jewels, of course. But something happened and he lost his way and he ended up in Sachi Devi's house, in the house. And so he had to return the child. But it is said it so transformed the thief, he became an ascetic and spent the rest of his time in meditation and prayer. And there are so many of these stories of transformation just by coming into contact. He didn't seem at all devout. And in fact, the Vaishnavas, the devotees of Krishna who were there in the neighborhood, he would, for a long time, into his teens, he would make fun of them and mock them. He got the best possible education because also this Nadia, this place, was a center of learning for a long time, until about 200-300 years ago. Even now there are pundits there, but it was one of the centers of learning, the greatest centers of learning in India at that time. And especially famous for something very different from devotion, from the ecstatic devotion of Krishna. It is Navya Nyaya, the school of new logic. In India, new, you have to treat it with caution, because new logic means 1,000 years old. just a note on that. Don't let me carry on, because I'll bore you to death about it. Something that I studied myself. The old school of logic called Nyaya, it underwent a revolution about 1,000 years ago. There was a great scholar who wrote Gangesha, who wrote the text called Tattva Chintamani, in a place called Mithila, which is now in Bihar. But very soon, scholars from Nadia, Navadvip, this area where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, they went to Mithila and they brought this new knowledge, the new logic back, and the pandits learned it and they cultured it. And so Navadvip became the center for the development of the school of new logic in India, Navya Nyaya, new logic. One of the most, not one, I would have to say, it's the most intricate and subtle system of logic the world has ever seen. I'm repeating Vivekananda's words. And then I'm adding now, until maybe the development of modern mathematical logic about 200 years ago, 150 years ago. So far outstripping, by the way, the Aristotelian logic. I've studied both, so I know. And the pandits, the scholars of Navadvip, took special pride in being, intellectual cultivation of logic and debating and so on. So this is the atmosphere in which the young child grew up. He was named, his name was Vishwambhara, rhyming also with, in keeping with the elder son. So Sachi Devi had a son before Vishwambhara, whose name was Vishwarupa. And this Vishwarupa actually left home long ago and became a monk. So long before the birth of Sri Chaitanya, Vishwarupa had left. And this is also part of the Vaishnava, the whole story, Chaitanya story, because the sorrow of Sachi Devi having lost one son to the monastic life. So the son called Vishwarupa grows up and his youth itself became a monk and was wandered off. And I, personal note here, I remember, my name is Vishwaroop. And many Bengali children are named, boys are named Vishwaroop because of the connection with Sri Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya is elder brother. So I still remembered when I first became a monk and went to our ashram in Deoghar, and I was introduced by a senior monk to the teachers who were teaching a school there, school teachers. So this boy has come to be a monk. His name is Vishwaroop. He'll now be known as Brahmachari Vishwaroop. And I still remember one of the elderly teachers, he said, with a name like that, how could it be otherwise that he's going to come to become a monk? Vishwambhara, he was also known as Nimai. And that was the name with which he was popular at that time in the locality, Nimai Pandit, Pandit scholar. He became an extraordinary scholar of grammar and logic, especially logic. At a very early age, he wrote a book on grammar, which was highly regarded. Besides, he had a number of teachers, notably Vasudeva Sarvabhauma, who was a very great scholar, of whom we'll hear much more later on. He was also, for a time, being a teacher of Nimai. Nimai proved to be a brilliant student. And very soon he opened his own school, as was expected of an upcoming young scholar in those days. You know, this was a place, Navadvipa, where for centuries, scholars from all over India, they came to learn this school of new logic, the neologic, Navyanyaya. There are records of even lamas from Tibet, from far off the icy, wind-swept plateau of Tibet, coming to Navadvipa to study Navyanaya, the school of neologic. Now, there were rival schools, Vedantins and all, who did not agree with the Nyaya school at all. But they all learned this as a language of debate and of a language of argumentation. His father died. Nimai's father died when he was very young. So Sachidevi was left alone with the son, and she took all responsibility of taking care of him and bringing him up. There is this very touching story. One of the great logicians of that time was Raghunatha, who was a friend of Nimai. And Raghunatha, he had a number of books on neologic, Navyalogic, Navyanyaya, to his credit. So, but Nimai far outstripped him in sharpness. So there's this anecdote of how their teacher, Vasudeva Sarvabhauma, gave a particularly difficult problem in logic to Raghunatha, who struggled with it for the better part of a day, finally giving the correct answer. And when the same problem was given to Nimai, he gave it in a flash, the answer he gave immediately. So that kind of genius. A very touching story. Nimai had started writing a book, a manual of Navyanaya, a new book on Navyanaya. And the pundits used to produce such books. There's a lot of literature about it. In fact, Professor Janardhan Ganeri, who was here, Professor of Philosophy, one of his well-regarded books is The Lost Age of Reason. The Lost Age of Reason. How Indian philosophy sort of faded out in 200 years ago in Navadvipa. And he talks about the final products of this kind of scholarship. So Raghunatha had written a book himself, and he heard that Nimai was writing a book, and he was curious because he knew his friend was, you know, many orders of magnitude more brilliant than him. So he was curious what was there in that book. And they were going on the boat on the Ganga. It's all on the bank of the Ganga. And he asks Nimai, could you show me the book? He was carrying the manuscript. Nimai said, sure. And Raghunatha started reading it, and within a couple of pages, he started weeping. And Nimai asked, why are you crying? Said, because your book is so amazing, nobody will ever read my book once this book, you know, is out. It was not published in those days, it was hand copied. People would copy the books with hands. And Nimai, he took the book back from Raghunath and tossed it into the river. That was the last. We don't have the book anymore. It was lost. So that shows, you know, the nature of the man. Swami Tapasyanandaji has written the life of Sri Chaitanya in that book, Bhakti Schools of Vedanta. There he says, so we lost a masterpiece of logic, but we gained a spiritual master. The world gained a spiritual master. He went around debating. He took a special delight in defeating opponents. Debate was an acknowledged form of intellectual activity in those days. There is the story of Keshava, a great scholar who came visiting. Everybody was scared of him because of his mastery and how easily he would defeat others. And they met. Nimai met Keshava on the bank of the Ganga one moonlit night. A very nice description is there. And Keshava treated him with condescension and, you know, like dismissive, because he was much younger. And Nimai asked him to compose verses on the beauty of the Ganga. And Keshava did that. He, on the spur of the moment, spontaneously, he composed 100 verses on the Ganga in the moonlit night and challenged, Nimai to find any fault with it. And Nimai picked up one verse. Picked up means he recited back one verse in the middle of those 100 verses. He had heard all the 100 verses and he remembered all the 100 immediately. And he repeated back one verse as a sample and found out 5 mistakes with it, according to the rules of poetry. Keshava was devastated. Until later on, he had a dream that night where Saraswati, the goddess of learning, appears to him in his dream and says, "I dwell in that young man." So Keshava was transformed. He became a devotee. And this you see again and again, most unlikely people becoming devotees. Now, a great transformation took place in Nimai. He went to Gaya, which is in Bihar now, where devout Hindus go to perform the funeral rites for their forefathers, for their father and all. So because for his father had passed away, he went to Gaya to perform the funeral rites for his father. There, in the Vishnu temple there, a strange change overcame him. A feeling of the presence of God in the form of Krishna. He felt that. And there he met his guru, Ishwarapuri, who was a monk of the Dashnavi, like the same order which we are monks of, Ishwarapuri. But Ishwarapuri had a distinction. He was not only a non-dualistic monk, but also he had introduced the worship of God, the love of God, devotion, bhakti. And he stressed that. And he found this extraordinary young man, and being requested, he initiated Nimai into the mantra of Krishna, Krishna mantra. And Nimai immediately went into an ecstasy. He started chanting the mantra continuously. He went through these two ups, tremendous ups and downs. Downs in the sense of, not really a down in the sense of depression, the tremendously missing, intensely missing the presence of God, of Krishna. And then he would feel the presence of Krishna and he would be fulfilled. And again he would miss the presence of Krishna and he would be distraught. But remember, this distraught and this feeling down and missing the presence of God, it's not really unhappy. It's a kind of happiness far greater than the greatest unhappy happiness we can get in worldly life. One saint says that shedding tears for God, it is much more pleasurable, much more joyous than the greatest happiness that one could get in worldly life, if you even weep for God. So in this way, Nimai comes back to Navadvipa. Now he's completely transformed because his students, when he goes to the class, he had this band of devoted followers who all wanted to learn logic from him, Navyanaya from him and all. And so they would sit around in class, but he would start, and in the beginning, it was auspicious to start the class with the name of Hari, the name of God. Hari is Narayana, Vishnu. But the moment he would say Hari, he would go into an ecstasy and he would forget the class. And he would talk about Krishna. Then suddenly he saw all of them staring at him. He said, what's wrong? Well, am I saying something wrong? And he said, you're not teaching. What about logic? And then he said, I must beg forgiveness of you, my dear friends, because the moment I take the name of Krishna, I see this little blue-skinned boy standing with a peacock feather in his hair and playing the flute, and I forget myself completely. I'm sorry, but I cannot teach. And I request all of you with folded hands, if you desire true good in the world, you forget all this logic and take the name of Krishna. And then he started chanting the name of Krishna, and all of those boys, they joined him in that singing, the kirtan, which you heard, various forms of that. And then from there, it spread to the town. And they would go out early in the morning, chanting the name of Krishna, dancing in ecstasy, going from house to house, and people would come and join them. It would be a procession through the street. They were already devout Vaishnavas, devotees of Krishna in that area. But this was a transformation, a kind of a revolution. Not all people liked it. Not all people liked it. Some of the elders thought he was just being a nuisance and a pest. This guy who was, almost seemed to be a skeptic and a scoffer just the other day, now he pretends to be a greater devotee than us. So some of them were very skeptical about his devotion. And they didn't like the commotion being set up by all these people early in the morning, pulling them out of bed and take the name of Krishna and all of that. So at one point they went on... So at that time, Bengal was ruled by a Muslim king, Hussein Shah. So this was a time of turmoil in North India because the waves of Islamic rule had come. Some parts had been conquered, including Bengal, just around the time, just before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. And the general flow of Hindu life had been disrupted in many areas. You'll come across this in various stories, which are not related to politics, but related to religion. If you come across, you know, the Vallabha story, the story of Chaitanya, you will keep coming across the stories of Islamic persecution, which was coming up at that time. So they went, these elders went on a deputation to the governor appointed by the Qazi, appointed by the king, Hussein Shah, and they complained against these people, you know, a public disorder and all that. And the governor, Qazi, who would later become devoted, would be transformed later on. But at that time, he ordered his officers to shut this down. There were numerous persecutions. Most horrifying was the story of Haridas, who was a Muslim and who became a devotee of Krishna, transformed by Chaitanya. And he kept on taking the name of Krishna. And then the Qazi ordered a punishment, that this is apostasy. You know, in Islam, you cannot convert out of Islam into any other religion. So the punishment was, this Haridas was to be publicly whipped and lashed till he died. And so they took him from town to town to whip him. But every time the lash landed on him, he felt a thrill of ecstasy. And he took the name of Krishna even more loudly. At one point he fainted and the guards thought that he had died. And so they threw his body into the river. But he revived, the water revived him, and he rushed back to Chaitanya. Number of others, notably, there was Advaita Acharya. His name is Advaitan, but he was not a teacher of Advaita. He was a teacher of Vaishnava Vedanta. He was an elderly devotee. There were elderly Vaishnava devotees there, Srivasa, Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya, at first, he was annoyed with the behavior of Nimai, but then he had a dream in which Krishna appears to him, whom he had worshipped all his life long. And Krishna says to him that, your prayers are fulfilled. Yeah. Old man, I come on this earth again as that boy I'm born as, the one you know, Nimai. So from that time onwards, Advaita Acharya's entire attitude towards Nimai was changed. When the Vaishnavas complained to him about the behavior of Nimai and his friends, he said, no, I know who he is. You will all see in the future. Then there was, I think it was Murari Gupta probably, the scholar. Mukunda Gupta? No, Murari Gupta. There was a great Advaita scholar who was a scholar of Yoga Vashishta. And Nimai, as a child, in fact, had gone, even before his transformation into this ecstatic lover of God, had gone to this elderly scholar's house. He would make fun of him, fun of his pretensions, of his ways of teaching, the body language. He would mimic him and make fun of him. And this elderly scholar was quite annoyed with him and said, what an impudent child you are. But then he had a vision of Sri Chaitanya. The vision that this would be repeated again and again, many who saw him and were changed completely, they got the same vision about him. And the vision was extraordinary. They would see, in place of this young man, they would see an amazing divine figure with six arms. Two arms would be holding a bow and arrows and Ramachandra, like Rama. The two other arms would be playing hands, would be playing a flute, Krishna. And the two other hands would be holding a sannyasi's staff and the water bowl, Danda Kamandalu. So because Chaitanya Nimai later became a monk. So in one incarnation, you see the young monk, but who is really none other than Krishna, who was really none other than Rama. So this transformed that scholar, and he became, the child told him, give up these dangerous pretensions that you are one with God, you have no non-dual philosophy, give it up. Be the devotee of God, be the lover of God. And this transformed him. One great person who came and joined this, and was very transformative for the entire Vaishnava movement, was Nityananda. He was what is called an avadhuta, a traveling monk, itinerant across India. And he met Ishwarpuri, who told him that if you really want to see Krishna, go to Navadvipa and meet this extraordinary young man, Nimai. I've initiated him into the Krishna mantra, but you should go and meet him. So he comes, and Nimai knew he was coming. And they meet, he embraces him and as a, like a long-lost friend, and he becomes a steadfast follower. So in among the Vaishnavas, the understanding is this was none other than Vishwarupa, the long-lost brother who had become a monk and left home. So it was really his brother. In any case, sort of like a spiritual brother. And this Nityananda, he became a very transformative force for the whole Vaishnava community. Why? Because later, Chaitanya, Nimai Chaitanya would tell him to give up his monastic life and come back into householder life and marry and settle down in Navadvipa and start a lineage of householder teachers who sort of formed the bedrock of the Vaishnava community till today. Then comes one extraordinary event. I mean, there's so many such events, but one very powerful event. It's called Mahaprakasha, the great light of the great revelation. What happened was, there was one elderly devotee of Krishna, Srivasa, who also began to recognize the greatness of Nimai. So one day, Nimai comes to his house in a state of ecstasy, chanting the name of Krishna. And so Srivasa used to worship Vishnu, which is same as Krishna. So, and there's a seat where Vishnu is worshipped. Nimai comes and sits down there, which is sacrilegious. You should never do that. He sits down there, but in a divine mood. And Srivasa recognizes the immanent divinity present right there. He calls other people in the neighborhood. So the description of that is amazing. People start crowding around. They can't take their eyes off his face. And they bring flowers, offer it at his feet. They chant hymns of adoration to Krishna, to Vishnu. They bring the description of loads of food. So the Vaishnava religion is very closely connected with food. All right, so you will find many kinds of delicious dishes are prepared and offered to the Lord. And it's taken as prasad, as offered food. So they bring all this food and there's a description of how they press him to eat. And he obliges all of them. The description is he ate enough for 1,000 people. But in that kind of ecstatic state. And then as the evening came on, they wanted to perform arati, because they felt the divinity is present in front of them. And whom did they call to perform the arati but none other than his old mother, Shachi Devi. And she comes to perform arati to this person who is her son. and she does this, and Nimai does something unthinkable. To his own mother, he touches her head with his feet, which is unthinkable for anybody, and especially a devout Hindu. And Shachi Devi goes into ecstasy, into samadhi. And people all around are stunned. And there are a number of such instances. There is this devotee, Sridhara, who was a very humble man. And Nimai, in that ecstatic state, sitting there, surrounded by these hundreds of people, called him forward and said, what do you... And touched him, and this Sridhara goes into ecstasy also, into samadhi. And Nimai asks him, what do you want? He says, I want nothing but devotion for you. Then there comes this another devotee whose name was also Murari, I think. And a very humble man. He comes, he's a devotee of Rama. And when he comes forward, he sees in that figure Rama and Sita together. And he goes into ecstasy. Nimai asks him, what do you want? Do you want? I can give you a kingdom if you want it. And he says, I want nothing but bhakti. He calls Haridas forward, the Muslim devotee, who comes in front of everybody, testifies how even when he was whipped, he felt nothing but ecstasy. And he also asks only for nothing but bhakti. And whenever Nimai would ask the people around, tell me what you want, and they felt he could grant anything that they wanted. They all want love of God. They wanted, we want this most extraordinary thing, this love of God. There's a song which Sri Ramakrishna was very fond of. I mukti dite katur noi, bhakti dite katur hoi. The Lord is saying, I am not miserly about mukti, liberation. You know, enlightenment and liberation, I can give it just like that. But bhakti, the pure love of God, that I'm miserly about, that I give. It's the rarest of things. So all of these people, they asked for bhakti. There was this devotee, all were called except one. I think it was Mukunda probably, if I remember correctly. He was regarded in the community as of angelic disposition, of a really deeply devoted person. But every time he tried to press forward and see Nimai in that state, Nimai specifically said, told people not to let him come. So he stood weeping outside, and he kept said, ask him, as evening is coming, and everything will soon be over. Ask him, when will I get to see the Lord? And when the people came and whispered to Nimai that he's standing there, why don't you let him in? And he wants to know when he'll get to see you. And Nimai said harshly, tell him that only in 10 million births. So they went and told him that. And to their utter surprise, he danced in ecstasy. And that only in 10 million births I'll get to see the Lord. And Nimai says, call him in now. And then he came in, he embraced him, and then told the gathered people that I just wanted to show to you what real devotion is, you know, in this young man. It went on till midnight, this kind of ecstatic madness all around. It's like a wave spilling out of the house of Srivasa. Around midnight, the crowds, they could bear it no longer. The description is that they couldn't bear his presence any longer. It was so overwhelming. I mean, when he moved along among them, and just to see him and stand in that presence, and people shivered, their heads stood on their end. And then they, in a group, they prayed to him, we want to see you back in your human form. He was in the human form, but they felt a clear divine presence there. And Chaitanya agreed, Nimai agreed, and the description is he gave a great shout and fell down unconscious in front of them. His face turned deathly white. This would happen again and again. And it seemed that life had fled from his body until they sang the songs of the gopis to Radha. And he came back to consciousness. Now see, the inner theology of the Bengal school of Vaishnavas is, who was Sri Chaitanya actually? Yes, incarnation of God. But what was the speciality? The deep inner secret of this is that it is what is called the dual incarnation of Radha and Krishna. So it is the one who loved Krishna most ever was Radha. Now Krishna wanted to taste the love of Radha for himself. So he comes as this incarnation in which he is outwardly Radha but inwardly Krishna. So he is Krishna. But he has taken the love of Radha as his outward existence. So this is the deep secret of the Chaitanya incarnation. And that's why anytime the songs of gopis and Radha, that would pull him back from the highest ecstasies also back to this world again. There is a story here, very famous in the Vaishnava lore, of the transformation of Jagai and Madhai. So these were two villains. They were actually supposed to be law officers, sheriffs, Kotwal. But they were thugs. And they terrorized the local people. And the local people were really upset and harassed by these two, Jagai and Madhai. Now, Nimai, who was also known by this time as Gauranga, because he had become like that, and of golden complexion. So Gauranga means the one of beautiful limbs or golden limbs. Fair or golden limbs. So Gauranga and Nityananda, both of them with the accompanying Vaishnava devotees, go to these two villains, Jagai and Madhai. So it's a very famous story among the Bengal Vaishnavas. Of course, these two villains, they scoff at the Vaishnavas, who tell them, beseech them, as they would do to everybody, take the name of Krishna, sing the name of Krishna. They scoffed and made fun of them, and then finally got furious and abused them. And one of them threw brickbats, and one of those hit Nityananda and started bleeding profusely. The story is that this made Gauranga furious. And then what happened was a miraculous event where Jagai and Madhai see from the sky a fiery disc coming down from the heavens, which is supposed to be Vishnu, Sudarshan Chakra, the disc of Vishnu. And in terror, they take refuge in Jagai and in Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya. And Nityananda tells Sri Chaitanya to forgive them. And Sri Chaitanya does forgive them, and he embraces both of them, and both of them are transformed into saints. I mean, if you read what happened to them afterwards, they go around seeking pardon from everybody. The description is that they would sit on the ghat. It's the river, and the ghat is the place where people, the steps, go down to the river to bathe. So they would sit, these two villains, erstwhile villains, they would sit on the ghat and beg forgiveness for all the people who would come down the stairs to the river, and they would beg, trample upon us, walk upon us to go down to the river. And one of them, with their own physical labor, built a new ghat, which is still there, which devotees use to go down to the Ganga. Okay, funny story interlude. Nothing to do with this wonderful story, just to bring down people's... The funny story is this. It's a ridiculous story, but I can't help telling it. This is a famous incident, and it's been depicted in Bengali drama. It's something that I think every Bengali child has seen, the drama of Jagai and Madhai and the transformation. So I saw one of these in our monastery. It was performed once, it was an utter disaster. So what had happened was, the people who performed it, they were all amateurs and part-time. I didn't think they had time to prepare. So they just went into it, improvised. And so there is Chaitanya, or Gauranga, and Nityananda, and Jagai, and Madhai, and everybody's coming on stage, and the devotees. But you notice all of them, they would come on stage and rush to that corner. That's where the prompter, the guy with the script was, so they could hear. Everybody is collected on that corner of the stage. And audience, most of whom were they were local kids and children, that we knew what was going on, so we enjoyed it thoroughly, the discomfiture of the actors also. And the heights came when Jagai, who sported a magnificent mustache, of course an artificial one, he was yelling abuse at Nityananda and Chaitanya. Now a part of the mustache slipped off and it fell like this. The actor was not aware, but we were. We all laughed, and the kids rolled with laughter. And it was an uproarious scene. And the actors, they knew it was a disaster, because the actor himself didn't know what was going on, but the others could see. And that the mustache was half here and half dangling in front of his lips. So the funniest was when Gauranga himself, he comes forward. See the improvisation. And he says, "Hush, you must not speak in this way." And he shut his mouth and quickly adjusted the mustache. And we all clapped in delight. I'm sure the director was tearing his hair by this time. So this was the rescue of, the conversion of Jagai and Madhai. A very well-known story there. Now, at this time, Gauranga, he felt that he had to become a monk. He had been married, by the way. The first time he was married, Lakshmi, she died because of a snake bite very soon. Later he was married to Vishnupriya. So Vishnupriya, she's always in the background, but she led a very saintly life and to the center of devotion for the Vaishnava devotees also. Now he wanted to become a monk. And so he knew this monk from his childhood, Keshava Bharati, which is another of the 10 orders of monks of Shankara's, Dashnavi Sampradaya. And Keshava Bharati at first refused to initiate him into sannyasa, into monasticism, because he felt this young man is far superior to me spiritually. But Chaitanya, Gauranga prevailed upon him, and so he was initiated into monastic vows. So his name became Sri Krishna Chaitanya Bharati. So he has two lineages here. One is the Puri. Ishwarapuri initiated him into the mantra, and Keshava Bharati initiated him into monasticism. Now, being a monk, he could no longer remain at home with his mother, with his wife, so he will go away. And he had planned to go away to Vrindavan. He had become a monk, and he will leave everything and go to Vrindavan, walk to Vrindavan, the place of Krishna and Radha and the gopis. Now, Nityananda knew that, and he knew he couldn't allow that to happen, because Krishna Chaitanya's mission, from now on we'll call him Krishna Chaitanya or Chaitanya. Mahaprabhu just means great lord. His mission was here in the plains of India, in the eastern part of India, not going away to Vrindavan. So he told a group of boys, Vaishnavas, to accompany Chaitanya and sing the songs of the gopis and lure him back in a circle so that he comes back to Shantipur, which is the house of Advaita Acharya, where the rest of them can go and catch hold of him. And that's what happened. He didn't know where he was going, and he missed the way to Vrindavan, which is 2,000 kilometers away probably. But he came back to Shantipur, and his mother came there, and the devotees came, they besieged him to stay. So there are again plays depicting the sorrow of the devotees and sorrow of the mother, especially in losing this son also, and that this son also becomes a monk and goes away. So the sorrow of Sachidevi and the appeals, pleading of the devotees for him to stay there. But he said he would go away, and he asked his mother, there are two options. I can go to Vrindavan. But then they gave him a second option, which is Puri, Nilachala Puri, which is in Orissa, which is not so far away. It's still hundreds of kilometers away, but it's not as far as Vrindavan. And it's a much more populated area. So Sachidevi said, you can go and stay there in Puri, in the temple, near the temple of Jagannath, so that I can get news about you once in a while. Because Puri is a center not only for Orissa, but also for Bengalis. So the Vaishnava devotees, the Puri is a very important, maybe the most important pilgrim center, maybe apart from Vrindavan, I think. So he agrees to do that, and Chaitanya starts out with, the description is dramatic, that once he got permission, he started walking hundreds of kilometers, accompanied by a group of close devotees, Vaishnava devotees. And they walked to Puri. Now, part of my enthusiasm, which you can feel, I guess, about Chaitanya, is also I grew up in that milieu, around that area. So he walks there, and I have to skip over so much. On the way, there is this temple called Sakshi Gopal, or as Bengalis would call it, Sakshi Gopal. There's a very cute image of the baby Krishna there, of Gopala there. And I must stop here. Sri Chaitanya stopped, so we'll stop with him. And Nityananda, who was accompanying him, told him the story of this temple and the image of Gopala. It's a cute story. And there are many such cute stories, but I'll narrate only one or two. I'm keeping track of the time. The story is this. So this temple, which is near Cuttack, just on the outskirts of the city of Cuttack. And these are very ancient cities, by the way. The Odisha, that culture there, the Jagannath temple, that is literally thousands of years old. The first references we get to the Jagannath cult, the worship of Jagannath, is way back in the Rig Veda, where there is a mention of Daru Brahma. The image of Jagannath is made of wood, and it is done again and again after a certain period of years. The old images are buried and the new image is created. It's made of wood. So the Brahman, the ultimate reality represented in wood, that reference you get back in the Rig Veda, which is around 5,000 or more years old. So there's a continuous story of Jagannath through the ages. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there, Adi Shankaracharya had come there, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, during Chaitanya's own time, Vallabhacharya, all the great masters of Vedanta had visited Puri, Jagannath Puri. And Jagannath, by the way, is Krishna. Another name of Jagannath is Purushottam, which is another name of Krishna. And the whole of Puri is called Purushottam Kshetra, the field or the city of Purushottam. But first, before entering Puri, we are still on the way. We stop with Chaitanya and the party, his band of merry devotees, because they were merry. They were always singing and dancing and creating a commotion where they went. In the little temple, which is still a little temple, very cute little temple of Sakshi Gopal, it means the witness. The child Krishna is Gopala, and Sakshi means witness. So what's the story? The story was that village where the temple is. Long ago, there used to be this young man, poor young man, who fell in love with the daughter of the head man. Now, the headman refused to give his daughter in marriage to this young man because this young man was poor and of humble origins. Now, one day they went on a pilgrimage to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, the headman fell ill, but the young man took care of him, nursed him back to health. And the headman, village headman, was so touched and impressed, he relented, yes, you can marry my daughter. When they came back to the village, and the young man pressed him on his promise, the headman said, no, I didn't say that. Where's your witness? Where's your witness? And in sorrow, the young man went back to Vrindavan and went to the temple of Gopala, narrated his tale of woe. At Gopala, he was very devoted to Gopala. So Gopala said, all right, I'll be a witness because I was here. I heard him say that. So I'll go back with you. And only condition is you must not look back. I'll walk with you. Show me the way to your village. But you must not look back. If you look back, I'll stop. So they walked. And all the way from Vrindavan back to Katak, to that village, on the outskirts of the village, this young man could bear it no longer. And he looked back. And he became this cute little image again. He stood there. And that's where they built the temple. All ended well because Sakshi Gopala revealed himself to the headman and prevailed upon him. And so these two were married and he became the first priest of that temple. So that's the story. And Sri Chaitanya worshipped Krishna in that temple. And then he could wait no longer. His eagerness had broken all bounds. He wanted to see Jagannath. So the temple of Jagannath. And so he raced ahead of even his closest devotees. Literally raced ahead. And then there's a description of when he first sees the spires of the temple. Even now when the devotees come to see the temple of Jagannath, the first vision is of the spires of the temple. That's the thing you see in the picture there. The spires of the temple and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he goes into ecstasy and in an ecstasy he runs to the temple. The guards try to prevent him from getting into the sanctum sanctorum, but he pushes past them. He stumbles and falls, and the guards are about to pounce on him and beat him up when this very venerable scholarly pandit sees this young monk and takes pity on him and says, stops the guards and says, it's all right, I'll take responsibility, and revives him and takes him back to his home. And this pandit was none other than Vasudev Sarvabhauma, who was a revered teacher of Nimai many years ago. So he had in this time migrated to Puri upon the invitation of the great king of Puri, Prataparudra. He was the pandit for Prataparudra. The lineage of Puri kings continues till date. So even now the king of Puri, they're called Gajapatis, the lord of the elephants. So he is also a devotee. All of them are devotees of Jagannath. In fact, the whole of Orissa is they are devotees of Jagannath. So he asks, and then he recognizes that this is the young man whom I taught. He is impressed by the devotion of Chaitanya. By that time, Chaitanya's followers have also arrived. He's impressed by the devotion, the bhakti to Krishna of them. But also, he's a great scholar of Vedanta. So that's his scholarship asserts itself. And then he says to Chaitanya that, it's all right, but this kind of sentimentality won't do. You must study Vedanta. Come to class. I'll teach you the Upanishads and the Brahma Sutras. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was tremendously humble. So he quietly agrees. He says, of course, I'll come. I don't know anything, so you can teach me. Remember, he was already a master of all the philosophies and all. So now he sits at the feet of Vasudeva Sarvabhauma, who starts expounding the Brahma Sutras, the aphorisms of Brahman, composed by Badarayana Vyasa, with the commentary of Adi Shankaracharya, which is a non-dualistic commentary, which is the one which we use also. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sits quietly, but no reaction. The classes go on for a few days until the great scholar gets irritated. He says, do you understand anything at all what I am telling you? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the original sutras of Vyasa are absolutely clear, but the commentary of Shankaracharya and your explanation, I can make neither head or tail of it, what you are saying. And then this great scholar gets very affronted and he challenges him to a debate. What do you mean? And there is a fierce debate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu easily dismisses all his arguments. And the scholar is discomfited. He didn't know what to do. Then he has that same vision. Suddenly in place of this young monk, he sees a different figure altogether. A towering luminous figure with six arms. Rama and Krishna and this young ascetic all are together in the body of this young ascetic. And he loses consciousness. When he comes to his awareness, he composes verses in spontaneously, Sanskrit verses in praise of Chaitanya, and seeks his forgiveness and becomes one of his closest followers. And through him, the king hears about it, Prataparudra. And the king comes to see this amazing young monk, and he also becomes a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Within a short time, the place is revolutionized. And of course, there's a tremendous devotion to Jagannath there, but also this new ecstatic form of worship, of singing and dancing. And every day the devotees with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go into the temple of Jagannath. There's a very powerful presence there, an extraordinary presence in that temple. There's no doubt about it, even till today. That's the only place Sri Ramakrishna refused to go to. Do you know that? It was very natural for him to go there because Bengalis all go there. But he said, that's the place, if I go there, I cannot keep this body. If I go to ecstasy there, I'll never come back again. So in his place, later on, Sri Sharada Devi, after Sri Ramakrishna passed away, Sri Sharada Devi actually went to the temple, and with this picture of Sri Ramakrishna like this, she showed the picture to Jagannath. There are amazing descriptions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would not go too close to the images of Jagannath and Balabhadra and Subhadra there. He would stay at a distance and in the hall, and he would put his hand on one of the stone pillars and he would watch. Extraordinary transformations in his body would come. You know, every hair would stand on its end in his hands, and then he would tremble and shiver, his eyes would become fixed, he would go, tears would flow down, copious tears, wetting his chest, down to his chest, flowing down his chest, he would stand there, his chest flushed with blood. That these things actually happen, it's not just exaggeration, people saw it around them. These same things were repeated in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, so those descriptions are there. These are codified in the Vaishnava Shastras. These are the signs of highest states of bhakti. One description is there, the big crowds pushed there, a lot of crowds there. So one description is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu standing and with his hand on that pillar. By the way, he used to stand there and his body would generate such tremendous heat that on that stone pillar, even now they say that there is an imprint of the hand of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It seems that even the stone melted. Now, crowds would press around him, the devotees would try to form a cordon and protect him as best as they could, but it's difficult. And there's a description of how one elderly woman from some village in Orissa has come to see Jagannath. That's their great pilgrimage. She climbs over the people and climbs on the shoulders of Chaitanya to see Jagannath in the distance. And the people are so furious, the devotees, they want to beat her up or something, and he prevents them. This is the sheer devotion for Jagannath. And there's so many such stories there. And he would organize kirtans with parties with these drums you just heard now and the cymbals. And people would gather around and sing the name of Krishna and circumambulate the temple. He goes on this pilgrimage. Vasudev Sarvabhauma told him to go on a pilgrimage to the south. Remember, all the great masters of Vedanta, Shankaracharya, then Ramanujacharya, then Madhvacharya, they're all from the south. The Vaishnava movement under Chaitanya swept through Bengal, but there's an interesting talk given by Swami Vivekananda after he came back from the west to Calcutta. So the Calcutta elite at that time thought of themselves as the elite of India because that was the British capital and the British administration were there and the Bengalis, they were in charge of various departments. And they always thought of themselves, and also the Bengal Renaissance had taken place, the influx of new knowledge, English and all of that. So they thought of themselves as the elite of India. Swami Vivekananda took them down one notch. In that lecture, he says, your so-called Vaishnava movement in Bengal, remember that is just a sub-school of the Madhva Vedanta of the South, of the dualistic Vedanta of the South. It is, and then he says, it is the brain of the South which rules India. So he goes on this pilgrimage. On his way, Vasudeva Sarvabhauma told him to meet one person, Rai Ramananda. who was probably the greatest devotee and philosopher of bhakti at that time in all of India. He was a governor of a small principality there. Chaitanya goes and Raya Ramananda immediately recognizes him for who he is. And there is a dialogue between them. He spends several days with Raya Ramananda. The description is extraordinary. There's a dialogue between them. Chaitanya asks, tell me about bhakti, the love of God. And then Raya Ramananda says something. And Chaitanya says, this is external, superficial, on the surface, go deeper. And then Raya Ramananda says something else. Chaitanya says, this is yet superficial, go deeper. Eho vajjo, this is external. Arokaho, go further, tell me more. What is love of God? First thing that Raya Ramananda says, well, it is doing your duties, living a virtuous life, and faith in God. And says, this is quite superficial, go deeper. And Raya Ramananda says, giving up all your duties, just for the love of God. Giving up all the duties of a Vedic Brahmin, forget that, just love God. That is love of God. Then Chaitanya says, even this is superficial, go further. And he says, what is real love of God? It is the love of the servant for the master, like Hanuman for Rama. Even this is superficial, this is external, go further. He says, it is the love of the friend for the friend, like Arjuna for Krishna, Sudama for Krishna. Even this is external, go further. It is the love of the father and the mother for the beloved child, like Yashoda or Devaki had for the baby Krishna. He says, even this is external, go further. He says, it is like the love of a devout wife for her beloved husband, like Rukmini for Krishna. Then Krishna says, even this is external. Krishna Chaitanya says, even this is external, superficial, go further. I mean, it's not superficial, it's extraordinarily high, but go further. And then Raya Ramananda says, love of God is like the love of the gopis, the lover for the beloved, who gave up everything just because they loved Krishna. See, even this, go further. And then Raya Ramananda finally reveals the secret, that it is love of God is the love of Radha for Krishna, the chief among the gopis. And then Sri Chaitanya gives him that vision. Now Raya Ramananda has another vision, not the usual vision everybody else has about Sri Chaitanya. That is the incarnation, Rama and Krishna and then Chaitanya in one body. He has a different vision. He sees Radha, and internally it is Krishna. It is Krishna born in this form to taste the bliss of Radha's love. Then he teaches Krishna Chaitanya, Raya Ramananda. He teaches Krishna Chaitanya what would become later the elements of the philosophy of Achintya Bhedabhed, the school of Vaishnava Vedanta, the inconceivable identity and difference, that the ultimate reality is Krishna, is Brahman, and Krishna has these three powers called Swarupa Shakti, the power of the self, what he truly is. Then Maya Shakti, creative power, and Jiva Shakti, us. We are all powers of Krishna. We have forgotten it, but we are powers of Krishna. We are Shaktis of Krishna, all sentient beings. Now, as Krishna, as he is, Swarupa Shakti, there are three aspects. Here we have Sat, Chit, Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. And among these, bliss, Ananda, there is the highest form of Ananda in which Krishna is delight and joy and the pure love of God in all beings, and most specially, his own love for himself reflected as Radha, the greatest love of Radha for Krishna. So this highest development of Ananda, this is called Ladini Shakti, literally the power of delight, of divine delight. And the physical embodiment of this Ladini Shakti is Radha. So this is the basic, this is a very complicated philosophy, but this is the basic background of it. It's a philosophy of love, of devotion and delight. Long pilgrimage, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back to Puri, to Nilachala. By the way, on this pilgrimage happened this very cute little incident. Sri Ramakrishna mentions it, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on his pilgrimage in the south, in one place he saw the Gita being taught, and one man standing in the distance and weeping. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks this man, What did you understand? What are you hearing? And what are you seeing? And why are you crying? And this young man, this person who's standing and weeping says, I don't understand a thing. I don't know Sanskrit. I don't know what he's being taught here. But whenever they talk about the Gita, I see clearly with these eyes. I see Krishna and Arjuna standing in the chariot and Krishna is teaching the Gita to Arjuna. And I stand and I weep. So this devotion, ecstatic devotion. So he comes back to Nilachala, the Puri, after his pilgrimage of South and Western India also. He comes back. There in Puri, he's again received with tremendous joy. There are many devotees from Navadvip, from Bengal. They hear that he has come back to Puri, so they come to join him again in Puri. And there's again a round of singing and dancing and kirtans. Now it is the time for the car festival, Ratha Yatra. Now you know the name Jagannath comes from that. I mean, the English word Jagannath. When the British first came to Puri, they saw these huge cars, the chariots, towering chariots, and hundreds of thousands of people gathering around them. And the journey which the chariots would take from the Puri temple to what is called the gardens of Gundicha and then back again. So it's a annual festival, which is in Puri, even till today, and it's been going on for thousands of years. So the British, you can well imagine, British ask, what's that? And the Oriya local people must have said, Jagannath. Now, Jagannath literally means Lord of the World. But the British were more interested in the towering chariot, and they thought that's Jagannath. And so that the word came, Jagannaut. That's the English word in dictionary. You'll find Jagannaut. It comes from Jagannath. But it means, in English, it means something that rolls along and crushing everything in spite, like a huge vehicle or some enormous vehicle. Hitler's Panzer divisions were called the Juggernaut, which rolled over Europe, you know. So Juggernaut. And for Vaishnavas, for Hindus, one of the greatest things is to go on the car, in the car festival, and see Juggernaut seated. He comes out of the temple, the images are put in the chariot, and he's seated in the chariot once in your lifetime. And if you can go do the greatest of things is to even pull the rope, get a chance to pull the rope for a few seconds. There's a saying, Rathe cha vamanam drishtva punarjanmana vidyate. By seeing the dwarf in the chariot, your cycle of births and deaths comes to an end. By seeing the Lord seated in the chariot, all your accumulated sins of past, you know, 1,000 lives are wiped away, and things like that. And it's a big festival, especially for children. I remember growing up, what you would do is, everybody got their own little Jagannath, chariot, little ones. I don't know if kids nowadays do it, but it's a very popular festival in Orissa and in Bengal. So the kids, you get new clothes on that day, and you get to pull the chariot, and you can go around giving the prasad, the little sweets, to people, and they would give you money. So it's very popular in Bengal and in Orissa. And in parts of the south also. There's a very beautiful story in Karnataka. The great Vedanta scholar, Vedanta Desika, who was a scholar of Vishishtadvaita Vedanta, in Ramanuja's lineage. So the very touching story. He is going around the village, the pathways of the village, on his way somewhere. And he sees little children pulling a cart, the little toy chariot of Jagannath, of Krishna in the chariot. They're pulling it and they're playing at worshipping Jagannath with, and they offer little balls made of the sand of the soil, and as if it is a laddu, you know, and offering it. And like innocent children, when they see this great scholar coming, this master of philosophy, they offer that little ball of sand to him. And he immediately accepts it, puts it into his mouth, and on that dirt road, full stretched, sashtanga pranam, the full bodied pranam, to that little dusty little toy, Krishna in that little chariot. And he stands up with tears streaming down his face and saying, what grace, my Lord, what grace you shower upon this unworthy servant. A great car festival is going to take place, Jagannath Rath Yatra. Even now, you will see the king of Puri, who is supposed to be the first servant of Jagannath. So he comes, before the Rath Yatra starts, he comes and sweeps the rode before the chariot. Of course, he's the king, so he gets a golden broom. There's a golden broom. Yeah, you can see it on So even the king now is also a descendant of Prataparudra, who was the king at that time. It begins with the cleansing of the temple. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took himself and all his devotees, and they got 100 pots of water, and they washed the temple. And then the chariot festival starts. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu divided his devotees into a description of 7 groups. 2 groups of kirtan in front, who would sing and dance. 2 groups on each side of the great chariot, and 1 group behind. And they would sing and dance all the way. He joined them. And he moved among the groups in such a way, so naturally the legend became, he divided himself into 7. He was with all of them at the same time. Tremendous devotion, the descriptions of him, tears rolling down his face, his chest, his hair standing on end. You dance beautifully. He was surrounded by people playing those drums, and the whole crowd would move back and forth as he rushed along in his dance, and then he came back in front of the chariot. At one place, exhausted from all the singing and dancing, he lay down to sleep when the chariot made one of its breaks. When he got up, there was a crisis. The chariot would not move. The people pulled and pulled and pulled, thousands of people. Then they got elephants in. And the elephants pulled and pulled, the chariot would not move. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came on the scene, he nudged it. And the description is the chariot fairly rattled along after that. So there are such stories. And the basic idea is, Krishna is going from Mathura to Vrindavan, back to Vrindavan, to meet his beloved gopis. So there's a Gundicha, gardens are there. So Jagannath goes in the chariot, and he goes and stays there for some time, and then he comes back to the main temple. So that's the whole chariot thing. Seeing the dwarf in the chariot, you're freed from the cycle of birth and rebirth. Of course, Vedantins give it a different meaning, is that if you see the Atman in this chariot of the body-mind, what you truly are, you are freed immediately from birth and death, because the Atman is ever free. And that meaning we give. But this ecstatic performance of, you know, intense love of God, this is got to be seen to be believed, you know. Nowadays, of course, you can see it on TV, the annual car festival, it is broadcast. And now millions of people attend. Luckily, the government now has organized it in a very nice way, so there's no chaos. It's very, very well organized. But still, it's a great spectacle. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived in Puri for several years, a few years after that. Then one more thing I'll mention, I'll then bring it to a close. He goes to Vrindavan, his cherished desire, going to Vrindavan for a pilgrimage, but which he wanted all along anyway. So he goes. At that time, Vrindavan was not very well developed. It had, the pilgrimage center had sort of disappeared. In between, there were temples of Govindaji, Gopinathji, you know, and they were all destroyed by waves of Islamic invaders. So the thing had sort of been partially extinguished. It was really Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who went there and rediscovered it. And then especially his followers, Roop Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they are all monks. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught them. They went there and revived Vrindavan into what it is now. So there is an ancient history of Vrindavan, which is the history of Krishna and the gopis. Then in the medieval times, there are these great temples which were built and then destroyed. And then the whole thing was again rediscovered and rebuilt up again to what it is now. Again, a story of a tremendous ecstasy. The description is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he reaches Mathura, the ecstasy and joy and intense love of God which you had seen in Puri, it's multiplied 10 times, it said there. It's multiplied 10 times. He sang and danced all the way from Mathura to Vrindavan itself. And there are beautiful descriptions of how the trees blossomed with flowers, the branches of the trees with the fruits bent down and touched as if to touch his feet. The cows came and licked his body. The deers followed him around. The birds sang. And so, very beautiful description. He stayed there and went to the various holy places which were not active at that time. He rediscovered them, connected to Sri Krishna's life. And later on, of course, temples and all again came up. The old temples were there. Some of them were revived. Some were rebuilt later on. This all comes in the centuries after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They found it difficult to keep him alive there because he would now and then jump into the river Yamuna. That reminded, the blue color reminded him of Krishna. So he would go and rush and jump into, and they had to go and drag him out of the water. He spent most of his time in ecstasies, which also told upon his health. So they persuaded him to come back to Puri and reminded him of his promise to his mother that he would stay in Puri. So on the way back, and on the way to Vrindavan and on the way back, they had stopped at Banaras, which has always been the great center of Hindu learning and scholarship. One of the great monks there, Prakashananda, is the center of Vedanta, of non-dual Vedanta, Prakashananda Saraswati, who was a confirmed non-dualist and who would have none of this singing and dancing business. So when he heard that a young monk has come who is full of ecstasy, love of Krishna, Prakashananda scoffed. He said, well, he must be... And then he said, but thousands of people follow him. And around him there is this great circle of bliss and people are transformed just by his presence or his touch. Prakashananda said, he must be some kind of sorcerer or a magician or something like that. This is not spiritual. And anyway, what's all this singing and dancing? Finally, Prakashananda got to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the meeting transformed Prakashananda completely. A great well of devotion, as it were, came up in his heart for Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him that amazing vision of Krishna and Rama in the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he fell at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was actually the author of a very radical Vedantic text, Vedanta Siddhanta Muktavali, which is, we discussed it earlier, the Drishti Srishti Vada. Seeing itself is the universe. We had a talk on that earlier. Prakashananda becomes Prabodhananda. He changes his name, becomes a follower of Chaitanya. He writes a book about Chaitanya. Chaitanya Chandramrita. Not Charitamrita, that's a different one. That's written by Krishnadas Kaviraj. This is another book on Chaitanya, Chaitanya Chandramrita. And he preaches the love of Krishna to the monks and other devotees in Banaras. Chaitanya told him that the true understanding of the Vedanta Sutras comes, the commentary is from the Bhagavata, which is a combination of devotion and knowledge. By the way, Rai Ramananda told him that higher than all of these forms of devotion is devotion with knowledge, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Knowledge and devotion combined. Higher than that is pure bhakti, love of God, not mixed with knowledge. Not that you are ignorant. By the way, one should not think that Sri Chaitanya and other devotees are devoid of non-dual knowledge. They all have all that, but they have an ecstatic devotion above and beyond that. Sri Ramakrishna said about Sri Chaitanya, it's an interesting comment which people generally, that side is not emphasized. He says, Sri Chaitanya's knowledge was like the sun, Shodjogan, and his devotion was like the moon. In him he combined the sun of knowledge with the moon of devotion. That was Sri Ramakrishna's reading of Sri Chaitanya. So they had this knowledge, and Sri Chaitanya taught them that the Prakashananda and others, you try to understand the Brahma Sutras through the Bhagavata, which was also composed by the same author, Vyasa. So it's a teaching of devotion mixed with knowledge, devotion and knowledge together. But that's not the Vaishnava conclusion. The Vaishnava conclusion goes a little, the Siddhanta, it goes one step further, that it is pure devotion. Beyond devotion and knowledge, higher than that is just devotion, pure devotion. Then Chaitanya comes back to Puri and he spent the last 14 years of his life there. Same stories, many stories of ecstasies and singing and dancing and thousands of people being attracted to him. There's a particularly beautiful description of kirtan going on at night and people have lit these great torches, mashal, or like lanterns or like torches. And they crowd around him using the flame of the torches to see his face. They just want to see his face in ecstasy when he's experiencing or seeing Krishna, face surcharged with love and awash with tears of love. Same problem, he would run into the sea thinking it is Krishna, blue, And he would, so once he nearly drowned, and the fishermen, they rescued him. They're called the Nuliyas. They're even now, if you go to Puri, you will see. They're these tiniest little boats. How they survive in the seas out there is an amazing thing. So they, in fact, rescued him with their nets and pulled him back to shore. Now, how he passed away is a bit of a mystery. The devotees believe he merged in Jagannath. His physical body disappeared into Jagannath. Another explanation is given by some scholars that that incident of drowning in the sea was actually that he did drown there and he died there. The rest of his, the description of his life afterwards is an addition afterwards. There are other theories. Another was when he was dancing ecstatically, remember, barefoot. So he cut his foot on a rock and that developed into an infection which finally took his life. So there are different these different theories. Nobody knows for sure. Just this much is that they didn't find his body and it just disappeared. This is the life of Sri Chaitanya. But the story continues. Nityananda and the other monks, this story of love of Krishna, it washed across the land and transformed at least Bengal and eastern parts of India and Orissa. Even now, he's a towering spiritual figure there. And now throughout the world. Through New York. We're New York and Manhattan, Central Park and all, Times Square. We are part of that story because this is where Srila Prabhupada, the first group of devotees, they started the Harinam Sankirtan here itself. Salutations to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, to Sri Ramakrishna, Ma Sharada, to Swami Vivekananda. We pray that not only we may have the liberation cherished in non-dual Vedanta, but also the most precious thing of all, this intense love of God, which will transform our lives here. And remember one non-dual master saying, if you want to be happy right now, continuously and sustained way, just be happy. Yes, yes, we want it. Fall in love with God. With God. And he says, if you want peace, yes, then meditation, samadhi. And then he says, but what about all this, Swami? What about non-dual Vedanta? What happened to your Vedanta? Then that monk said, and if you want the truth, come to Vedanta. Not that the others are not truth. They're all based on truth. But there are ecstatic developments based on the foundation. In fact, many people say non-dual Vedanta is the highest or the final. I sort of think of it as beginning. Sri Ramakrishna says, tie the knowledge of non-duality to the hem of your cloth and then do whatever else you want. We pray for this extraordinary, even a drop of this extraordinary love which will transform our lives forever. The most fortunate get this love of God. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ram Krishna Rupanamastu.